Hey, it's Chaz Mostard here, and yes, I'm inside your speaker. I'm in here because I have a special message for you from Clayton in Melbourne. If you're a club, state, or national racer on the circuit or on the dirt in Speedway or rallying, you can now tap into the know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. The same expertise that's won multiple Bathurst 1000s and V8 Supercar Championships is now available for you to call upon. From bonnet to bumper, WRS can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, and so much more for all sorts of makes, models, and categories. Have a chat with Walkinshaw Racing Services and tell them what matters to you. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
G'day race fans, welcome to the Motorsport News Podcast. I'm your host Will Dale and here's what's making headlines this week. Supercars has made a few tweaks to its 2024 calendar and race formats. The Sandown 500 has been brought forward a weekend to September 13 to 15 due to a date clash with a horse racing event at another Melbourne Racing Club run track, while it's ditched the compulsory fuel drop for both races at Taupo, made the Sunday sprint at Sydney Motorsport Park a twilight race, and changed up the criteria to win the Darwin Triple Crown. A driver now has to top Friday's qualifying session and sweep both races. There's also some good news if you're an international listener to the MN Pod. You'll be able to watch all the supercars action at Albert Park this weekend. Rights issues have prevented it in the past, but this year every session will be shown live overseas through Superview on supercars.com and on YouTube. The Shannon Speed Series headed to the Apple Isle and it was a really spicy one in TCR. Tony D'Alberto, Dylan O'Keefe and Tom Oliphant split the wins at Simmons Plains while Zach Suter leads the points. But the big news was D'Alberto electing to sit out race 3 in protest, and we'll break down all of that later in the show. While in Trans Am, Supercars rising star James Golding took abrasive wins to take the round overall from Elliot Barber and Jordan Boyes, while James Moffat retained the points lead. And big crowds once again flocked to the Adelaide Motorsport Festival, the two-day event featuring iconic machines from Formula One, Supercars and MotoGP history, and pencil in March 1 and 2, 2025 into your diary, as organisers have confirmed that is when next year's event is taking place. Joining me as always is V8 Sleuth's Head of Publications, Stefan Bartholomaeus. And Stefan, how does it feel to be one of the select few people who's going to get to roam around the supercars paddock at Albert Park this weekend?
Hello, Will. It's certainly going to be a strange weekend for supercars as the fourth string category at Albert Park. And yeah, those paddock restrictions are a sad part of that. And I've not actually picked up my pass yet, so let's not take anything for granted.
Right, on with the show. Let's start with our stars of the week. Steph, who's getting yours?
I'm actually giving my star to a car this week.
Hey.
And that's the Mazda 767B Group C sports car that was brought out from Japan for the Adelaide Motorsport Festival. There were a lot of amazing cars at that event, but the amount of love for that Mazda was just incredible. Like, it's obviously a head turner on track because of the sound of its quad rotor engine, but just whenever and wherever it was parked up, there was just a crowd around it like no other car. It was truly a star of the event.
People do love a rotary. That's cool. I mean, it's a good... I always thought the 767B would maybe get sidelined a bit because it's, you know, it's not the Le Mans winner, but it's still a cool car.
Yeah, and that particular car's got a cool story as well with the fella who owns it and brought it out here, Senji Hoshino, who used to work at Mazda Speed on that program and, was able to secure one of the cars after it all wrapped up. And he's been out here before for Time Attack and done some stuff in New Zealand with it as well. So it's a car that gets out and about and, as I say, very popular.
Very well-deserved star there. Mine's going to an American racer named Vicente Salas. So he's a very talented e-racer. And in fact, he dominated a race of NASCAR's official iRacing series back in 2021 as a rookie. He smoked everyone at Richmond. And he used that as a springboard to go racing in the real world. So he ended up racing late models for the last couple of years. I think he even won a race at Hickory Motor Speedway last year. Well, he's getting my star of the week because he's just announced a deal to go and race in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series race at the Circuit of the Americas this weekend. So as a long suffering, frustrated sim racer from back in the day. It is nice to see, well, I can't say he's one of my people because I don't think he and I are in the same postcode when it comes to sim racing, but it's great to see someone living their dream. He's dreamed to become a real-life racer since sitting in Tony Stewart's show car when he was 3 years old at a Home Depot, and now he's racing the number 20 truck, so that is lovely to see.
That's going to be a wild race to debut in as well. They don't pay any respect to track limits or each other there at the Circuit of the Americas.
Yeah, I think he's going to find the driving standards a bit looser than they are in iRacing. Right, first cab off the rank for this week, Adelaide Motorsport Festival. Steph, you're on the ground. Was that your first time at the AMF?
No, I'd actually been to one of them in the early years, but yeah, it's certainly come a long way since then, and I was blown away by how big the Friday night element in the city there is when they drive the cars into town and park them in front of the Central Market there on Goodger Street. Like, there was just a huge turnout for that, and people lining the streets as the cars drove through. It looked really cool. And then, yeah, obviously the main part of the weekend in Victoria Park, it's just a great little setup. They use a little 1.4-kilometre loop that uses the parklands and then that Wakefield Road to link it up, and it just all works pretty well.
What were some of your highlights of the weekend in terms of like the cars and the stars and yeah?
Oh, there were a lot of things to like, and I think the event just primarily it does a really good job of trading off that Adelaide Grand Prix history, you know, and you look at the mainstream media coverage from it and they just lap up those news angles every time, whether it's Damon Hill they had out this year and some of the old cars they get out. And so there's that element that just works. And then they also now have that connectivity into the current F1 scene because of the Grand Prix being next week and having Bottas and Steiner and those sort of people out there as well. So I think that's its core. But the real beauty is that it just caters for everyone. Like, it's not just F1 and it's not just all the Bathurst winning cars they had there, but there's drifting and bikes and rallying and the high-end road car stuff, which is an important part of their sort of corporate element. But it just attracts this really diverse crowd and has such a different feel to say the Adelaide 500 at the same location. So I think supercars could learn a few things from how they go about it, just including the way they have this marquee set up where the stars are interviewed in front of the fans. It's kind of almost a corporate experience for a GA price.
Did I see right that for some of those interviews, they were actually wheeling relevant cars up onto the stage next to them?
Yeah, I think they were doing that for everybody. And yeah, that's just a nice touch as well. Like, even if you're sitting 40 rows deep and the actual person on the stage looks pretty small, but to have that race car sitting there next to them, it's something pretty cool to look at while you're hearing the stories.
Now, while Steph was on the ground there in Adelaide, he caught up with Craig Lowndes, and as the 7-time Bathurst winner explains, he had a pretty busy weekend behind the wheel.
Craig Lowndes, you're a regular at this Adelaide Motorsport Festival. What's your take on how it's grown this year?
Well, this year, actually, I've got to say, is really almost doubled in capacity of not only vehicles and teams, but also people and crowd. I think there's no doubt that it's definitely been growing since COVID. And I think it's really a proven fact. You know, when you've got people like Gunther coming out, you know, Liam Lawson, you've got Valtteri back. So it just sort of shows the magnitude of and how far and wide we now sort of reach. And people want to come. And it really is just a lot of fun.
They also come to see you, of course, and you've got plenty going on. The Arrows F1 car, you've got the Better Electrical V8 supercar, and also this Ferrari FXX that we're standing here right now.
Yep.
Your head must be spinning.
Well, thankfully, all three cars are very, very, very different. So the Ferrari is paddle shift, the F1's the old style 6-speed H pattern on the right, and of course the supercars on the left. So everything's very different, but it's a great opportunity to drive some exotic cars. Like, we've driven the Ferrari before in the past, and it's great that the owners allow these cars to come out of the garages. You know, the old chassis 10 is really, you know, for me it's a bit of old running down memory lane a bit, and of course then to have an opportunity in a Formula One car like a Arrows, which was the last of that era of the turbos. I grew up watching them, never had an opportunity to drive in one. Now I do. It's just a really great treat to be able to do that and to see these exotic cars and old Formula Ones, got motorbikes running around as well, still out running in their capacity and to please the fans.
You've driven a few different classic F1 cars now due to events like this. How does the Arrows compare to a couple of the others?
Well, the Arrows is actually quite nice. It's really nicely balanced. The other ones we've driven in the past, we have had a mix of the other Arrows, which was a V8 engine. The monocoque was quite narrow, but it was a sequential, so it wasn't too bad. And then there was another one, another mid-80s sort of turbo version last year, which again was, you sit quite forward in it, almost at the front wheel. So again, it's amazing to see what these drivers did in that era and what they went through to drive these cars in that time. So again, the Arrows this year, the 88 Arrows, which Eddie Cheever and Derek Warwick ran. Again, it's just really special to be able to be part of that era now, later in life.
Derek Warwick, of course, a founding co-owner of 888. Now, I saw when you were out in the Falcon yesterday, you were having a bit of a dice with Benny Eggleston, who was, of course, driving the 2006 Rick Kelly Toll HSV dealer team Commodore. Bring back a few memories of that Phillip Island round. Did you think about maybe giving it a bit of a touch-up?
We actually did. Benny Eggleston and I did actually laugh and had a bit of a joke about it. We sort of said, oh, look, do you want to recreate it? And he said, no. So obviously owners, you know, want the cars back in the way that they could deliver it. So yeah, look, again, it was a bit of history again for the punters and the fans to be able to see these cars still running around. And you know, Benny's threatened to put some super softs on his to have a bit of a fun.
Now Roland Dane's also hanging around here this weekend. Is it true that he sort of rescued that Falcon this weekend by bringing something down from Brisbane?
Yeah, we ran it on Friday just to give it a shakedown, and actually, unfortunately, we broke a rocker in it. So yeah, thankfully our delivery man, the postal man, Roland Dane, brought one with him in his luggage. So yeah, we got it going. Yeah, it was no drama. So again, a treat to be able to showcase this car instead of being just basically a museum piece, is to get it out on track and people can see it run around.
Now we're talking about that beautiful Ford, but of course you're a GM man again now, and you did something special on Friday night driving into the city, also with Lara involved in that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was sort of an idea actually come out of Lara to get the W427 out of the museum, which has been basically in the museum most of its life. Lara had to find some actually tyres for it, thankfully through Pirelli, and because I want original tyres, and to drive that through the town or into town. And it's the first time it's sort of been out of the museum in a long time, and it's 101. It was obviously earmarked to try and be a more production model back in the day, and unfortunately it never got up. So yeah, really special to do that. And then Lara driving the new Corvette with the roof off, so that was quite funny. It was the first time a female's actually participated in the drive to town or track to town, so yeah, that was good as well.
The Shannon Speed Series was in action in Tasmania over the weekend, and some of the racing there was absolutely incredible. I mean, that final TCR sprint on the Sunday was just out of control, but unfortunately the main headline was who wasn't racing in that race, Tony D'Alberto. The short version is that he won race one, which through a red flag and safety cars, only 10 of the 30 scheduled laps were completed. He finished eighth in race two, which under the TCR points system, where they combine the points from races one and two to work out the grid for race three, earned him pole position for race three. However, a protest from a rival team, and we'll get to which team later, saw race one ruled as being a no points race due to not completing 50% of the scheduled race distance. So in response to that, Tony did the formation lap of race three and headed to pit lane and got out of the car. And this is what he had to say to Chris Stubbs when he came to talk about why.
It's very much a sad situation to have the car here in pit lane. But, you know, we put on pole, won the first race. We conserved in race two just to look after the car. We knew we had enough points to start on pole for the last one. And then, you know, a decision's been made to basically, you know, race one is non-points. And we start that race back in seventh. I think it's just so unprofessional to happen so late in the piece. I had to make a stand.
In terms of your championship, you wrapped up this tie line 2 years ago. You know very well that every point counts. This is a significant decision. Was it yours alone?
Yes, the team were encouraging me to do the race, but I decided to pull a pin on it because I just think it's absolutely unprofessional and I don't want to be part of that.
It's got pretty heated out on track. I don't know how much of the racing that you've seen. It's fair to say that there was a lot going on in this lane. Did you have a lot of support? Were you alone in your frustration? I sense that you probably weren't.
No, I mean, everyone was talking the same thing. Probably some weren't quite as brave as what I was to stop, you know, not do the race. But that's just where I'm at the moment. I'm quite frustrated with the whole thing. And the championship want to have myself, Honda, some big sponsors in the category, then they need to operate at a professional level. And this weekend has clearly been subpar, and there's been obviously different reasons for that. And you know, everyone makes mistakes, whatever. We all, you know, have made mistakes, but it just keeps continuing.
What are you hoping happens from this? Is there still an avenue of appeal?
I don't think so. I think the race is run and done, and as far as I know, there's no appeal after this. But I'm just so disappointed in the whole process, and I'm willing enough not to do the race to take a stand.
It is quite a statement, and we'll see you at Phillip Island.
Audio there from 7 Plus. Wall Racing has now notified their intention to appeal the stewards' ruling about race one, and that all means that the round result is provisional. Steph, there's a fair bit to unpack from all of this. I can't remember anything quite like this happening with a driver making this significant a protest. But if we look at how the rules around this situation worked, so it's not like supercars where there's something in the ops manual that defines whether points get awarded or not and how that all works. There's nothing in the TCR rules and regulations about that, so it all reverts to Motorsport Australia's standing regulations for circuit racing. So if you go to rule 5.12.10, it says the following will apply to any race in which the scheduled distance slash duration is not completed by the leader. If less, and the relevant one, there's three options here, but the relevant one is if less than 50% of the race has been completed, no points will be awarded. And 10 out of 30 is definitely less than 50. The key thing is the words scheduled distance or duration. So although these races for TCR go time certain, they have a scheduled race distance, so 30 laps. So in a way, it's similar to what happened with the supercars race. If you think back to 2017, there was that massive crash on, I think, lap 2 or 3, and there was a long cleanup, and the race semi-resumed behind the safety car for a couple of laps, and a checkered flag was waved. So technically, under the Motorsport Australian supercars rules, a race occurred, but I think everyone came to the agreement that maybe it wasn't deserving of 150 points. However, the rules have changed slightly since then. So if you go and look at the standing regulations on the MA website for circuit racing, there's a section that's crossed out that used to be there where it used to say the following will apply to any race which is suspended and not resumed. So this rule wouldn't have applied to this scenario until that was changed. And I believe that's only happened in the last couple of years. So that's the mechanics of how that happened. So initially, Tony was awarded the win, but then it was protested the following morning once the provisional results were posted by the stewards. And as I alluded to earlier, the team that that lodged that protest was Gary Rogers Motorsport, which is a bit awkward, Steph, when it's not only a competitor but also a category manager who files the protest.
Yeah, and I think that background there is part of why there was such a big reaction to what started as a mistake in race control, which was essentially in the applying of the red flag rules, because it happened on the opening lap. So it was a full restart rather than a race suspension in this case. But going back to your point, it is pretty clear that the TCR paddock is split into two camps at the moment. There's GRM. And there's everyone else. And there was a sentiment from the majority that for the good of the category, they wouldn't protest the full points result. But then GRM did protest and it all kicked off from there. And it is awkward considering that ownership of ARG by the Rogers. But at the same time, you look at this and Stefan Millard runs the GRM race team and it has customers like the Barguanas that they're running cars for. So if GRM put in a protest and it's found that the officials hadn't applied their own rules correctly, to me, that's on the officials, and it was just a mistake. That wasn't a conspiracy.
No, and that it, you point out that it is a very awkward position that GRM is not just competing in the category as GRM. There are other cars that they run. To be honest, I've thought a bit about how Tony went about venting his frustration. It's a bold move. Like, it's a bold move to just basically take your bat and ball and go home. But would we be talking about it this much if he hadn't? I mean, this is probably comfortably the most column inches, to use a very outdated term, that TCR has gotten in quite a while. Yes, he's probably harpooned his championship hopes by doing so, because he's lost out any points in the final Sunday race, regardless of whether he can get the 50 back for winning race one. I really don't know where I stand on this, because I get that, like, if you're that upset with the decision, you've got to do something, but I don't know whether that was necessarily the right thing to do.
Well, it sounded like a lot of the competitors, pretty much all the non-GRM drivers, had talked about doing it in the lead up there to race three, but only Tony did in the end. So whether it was the right call or the wrong call, I mean, it was Tony's call, and he wears the consequences of it from a sporting perspective. But yeah, clearly there's a big frustration with how the category is being run, and these circumstances over the weekend exposed some issues. I mean, you look at the fact that the officials and the stewards at these events, like, they're covering all the categories. They're not just dedicated to TCR, and that's contributed to the cascading events. Like, they didn't have time to resolve these issues while the rest of the race meeting was unfolding, and it all just blew up before race three, which was kind of too late to fix this. So does that need more resourcing? You know, will ARG pay for TCR to have its own stewards? Like, I don't know if they can justify doing something like that, but one thing that I believe will happen is that the Speed Series will run purely timed races from the next round onwards, which isn't directly related to what's going on here, but it could at least simplify some things slightly, dropping that lap count and having that double sort of in the regulation there. So I think we'll see that going forward. But in the meantime, yeah, this wall racing appeal, that's really about when the time count should have started for race one. I think that's the key issue that'll go into.
And the wall racing appeal will be heard in the lead up to Race Phillip Island, which is the next round of the Super Cheap Auto TCR Australia Series. And the results, and I guess the overall standings for TCR, will remain provisional until the results of that appeal are handed down. Steph, we've got a very big race weekend coming up here at Albert Park. We, of course, have the Formula One Rolex Australian Grand Prix and the MSS Security Melbourne Super Sprint. We won't mention Formula 2 or Formula 3. Steph, let's start with the supercars first. Soft tyre, smooth, flat F1 track. It's a bit different to what they had last time out at Mount Panorama. Are you expecting much of a shake-up of the form guide?
Well, it's certainly a different set of circumstances all around, not just the track and the tyres, but as we said right at the top, like, it's just such a different weekend for the teams being based out of tents and only doing sprint races. It's a real throwback to the old days. So there's going to be logistical challenges that come with not having a pit lane, and that the teams need to adapt to that stuff. And, you know, there's probably some weirdness to come out of it too, or definitely the potential for it. So it's hard to know how all that will affect the form guide and the on-track stuff. But what we do know is that with short races and no pit stops, qualifying and the race starts, they're going to be just super important. And at Bathurst, we saw the 888 guys really dominate qualifying, which is something they weren't necessarily the strongest at last year. But those guys had some shocking starts in the races, and they were sort of able to box people out and make the best of it at Bathurst. But at Albert Park, it's really open, and you can be really vulnerable at turn one to some trouble there if you don't get off the line well. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I'm curious to see how Erebus rolls out this weekend, because, I mean, they've had, it's So much has been said and written about everything that's gone on with them over the off-season and all the changes that occurred in the lead-up to round, or all the turmoil, let's say, rather than changes that occurred in the lead-up to round one. But they've had a race weekend under their belts. Now, Todd Hazelwood and Jack LeBrock have both have a much better idea of what the Erebus package is like through 3 days of running at Mount Panorama. You would expect that they'd have a bit of a form resurgence and be a bit closer to where they were last year now that they've got that under their belt.
Yeah, well, this is the event last year where Erebus really laid down its marker. Like, Brody went to Albert Park having never even won a race in the championship before. And everything that we saw last year sort of really started at Albert Park. So, for sure, Todd and Jack, they're going to be in the spotlight. The Erebus cars were, we talk about qualifying, they were just the qualifying kings last year, particularly Brody. And again, it's really only the drivers that have changed. So it's a matter of whether these guys can deliver.
There's a few Ford teams that need to bounce back as well after difficult starts to the season. Tickford and DJR are the ones I'm in particular thinking of. I guess if Tickford gets through the Albert Park weekend without burning a car to the ground, they'll still be one ahead of where they were this time last year. And I was surprised. I went back through the numbers from last year's event, and Anton De Pasquale put a DJR car on pole here last year, which I don't think one lap pace is anything that the Mustangs, and in particular the DJR cars, are going to be remembered for from their 2023 seasons, or for that matter, their form at Mount Panorama.
Yeah, especially last year's Albert Park, sort of really remembered as one of the real points where this parity thing blew up. So, yes, it's easy to forget that Anton scored a pole there, but Bathurst a couple of weeks ago did show that those two teams, DJR and Tickford, still have a fair bit of work to do. There's going to be a fair bit of attention on Cam Waters. He's got a brand new car for this round, but he's got a big hole to dig himself out of championship-wise, so he needs to start that process here and now. I think on the Ford side, the positives really out of Bathurst were Walkinshaw's and Groves and the speed that they had across their cars. So, there's four exciting drivers there in those two lineups to watch this weekend.
And we can only hope that we don't hear too much of the dreaded P-word parity over the course of the event. Of course, the main event, though, the Formula One stars are in town for the Australian Grand Prix. I presume we can probably pencil in Max Verstappen for the win, but Steph, who do you reckon's next best?
Well, yeah, I think everyone's penciling Max in for the win. It's just fait accompli these days, but there's plenty of interest behind, isn't there? Like the Ferrari, Mercedes, Fernando and the McLarens are all relatively close. The Ferrari's been sort of at the front of that order, but who knows what we see at Albert Park. As always, there's going to be a huge attention on the Australians, and we can only hope with Oscar that the McLaren is good enough that he can fight for a good result and maybe a podium. Probably takes a little bit of that hometown pressure off him having Daniel Ricciardo back in the field. Obviously, he wasn't in the race last year, so that could take some of the public spotlight away from Oscar. But either way, it's going to be a huge weekend. The F1 races at Albert Park are just packed to the rafters these days, so it should be a good atmosphere.
Speedway has a rich history in Sydney, but there's been a bit of a dry spell since the end of racing at Parramatta City Speedway, the Speedway by the Freeway, a few years ago. And sadly, there have been plenty of problems with the $110 million Sydney International Speedway, the venue that was meant to replace it, but it's going to be back in action with racing on this weekend. To explain everything that's happened, I chatted to Toby Bell-Bowen from Sprint Car Hub. Toby, welcome to the podcast. It's been quite the long-running saga for Eastern Creek Speedway, or Sydney International Speedway, as I guess it's now known. It's been a long saga to get to this point. I guess, firstly, how long has it been now since we've had racing there?
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on. It's been, April last year, 2023, since we've had racing at what was Eastern Creek Speedway, but it's been kind of unofficially named Sydney International Speedway now. So, yeah, over 11 months now, and finally this coming weekend, we're actually about to have some racing again.
So what have we actually got on this weekend?
There are sprint cars. The nominations will be out in the middle of the week. And then there's also late models and I think fender benders as well, which obviously being sprint car hub, I mean, we don't talk about really anything other than sprint car racing, much to the disgust of some Speedway fans. But yeah, it's going to either way, it's just such a great thing to have just racing back in Sydney. And on top of that, at a venue that really should be pumping right now.
Well, I went back today and like I rewatched all your videos on Sprint Car Hub that cover the story of the Speedway from start to, well, I was going to say start to finish, but start to now.
Yeah.
Honestly, it feels like the synopsis of an episode of Utopia or Yes Minister or one of those political satires, because the backstory of just the end of Valvoline Raceway and the creation of this Speedway, the dramas surrounding the lease, I mean, you couldn't have made this stuff up.
You're 100% right. And, I can't believe you watched all of our videos, because we've probably done, I don't know, about 15 more or more videos on the whole saga. But yeah, it's such a crazy story of how all of this went down with the closure of Parramatta's Valvoline Raceway, which was early 2020 with COVID being strong at that time. The announcement that Valvoline Raceway would close at the end of 2019 and all the way through until now, probably the saddest part is that it kind of didn't have to be this way, the whole saga. But fortunately now, this coming weekend, we're going to return to racing and hopefully be at the start of actually seeing this venue and this sport thrive here in Sydney. But yeah, it's definitely been a colourful sort of time the last 4 years or so.
So what has changed with the track itself since racing halted? I mean, there were quite a few issues that were flagged at the time, and quite a few of those issues caused racing to stop for quite some time.
Yeah, there was basically the way I like to kind of lay it out is that there were two separate issues, which inside of those two separate issues were a lot of issues. So there's the lease agreement that the promoters would have to kind of their conditions, whether it's financial terms or operational terms. And then there's the actual physical issues of the racetrack. Now, the promoters, the original promoters of the Speedway, never really signed the actual eventual lease agreement from when the Speedway was actually finished by the government, if you will. So that was in September of last year, right as the Speedway was really meant to, the season was meant to start. The promoters ended up walking away when they were meant to sign on. So the terms there weren't really, and still, from my understanding, aren't really favorable for any promoter to operate. Fortunately, now we have someone having a go with the Speedway, and it's great to see it back this weekend. And then there's the physical issues, the other side of the problems, where there was, just for example, I've been told that there's a list close to about 100. The issues with the place, but jeez, the major sort of ones that stand out to people, was drainage issues with the track, especially in turn three, where water was seeping under the racetrack and, puddling water there. And we can't race on that on our type of surface that Speedway requires. And then, there's a small car park that's not really up to scratch. I worked out in one of our videos that, the place is meant to hold 7,000 fans, and for the amount of car parking spaces they had, you'd need, I think, a 12-seater in every spot to pack 7,000 people in. So jeez, just silly stuff like that. There was no power in the pits. The lighting wasn't suitable for Speedway, and since then they've, I don't want to harp on, I guess, about the issues, because it's said that a lot of them are meant to be fixed. One that is fantastic is the drainage issue, because now that that's kind of been solved, there's going to be no more cancellation of events due to drainage problems. I think it just got everyone by surprise, because the Speedway was meant to cost $30 to $40 million of taxpayers' money, and it's now well over $110 million. So to have this expensive facility of anything and for it to not be operating is what really, upset not just competitors, but, obviously the general public as well. So there was a number of issues, and now it sounds like the physical issues have been pretty much well sorted out. And as for the financial terms, I guess that's a bit more private with the lease holders now. It's actually under a sublease now. So City International Speedway Proprietary Limited are under City Dragway. They're the kind of the middlemen that the new promoters will have to give a bit of cash to. But it's just, I mean, again, watch all our videos on Sprinker Hub on our YouTube channel. And yeah, to sum it all up in just a few sentences is a bit difficult.
Yeah, considering some of the videos I watched today are like half an hour long, asking you to do the impossible in 3 minutes. It is a crying shame that there's been this drama surrounding the circuit. I mean, Sydney's got such a rich heritage in speedway racing going back, well, so many decades now. How much has it hurt the industry by not having a marquee speedway running in the city for this long?
Yeah, massively. Again, hard, difficult to put a number on it all, but Sydney at one point was a thriving hub of, in particular, sprint car racing, where, you know, the most talented and biggest and best teams and drivers were centered and focused on. I mean, there was a traveling World Series sprint cars, but Sydney was always, for a long time, was the hotbed of speedway racing and, in particular, sprint car racing. So to shut that down, not just the facility, but the sport to just come to a halt in Australia, Sydney and I guess Melbourne is really a hub for any sport or any sort of activity. So to stop that was just such a dampener on the sport. And then we just, you know, I've got to be honest, the timing of it all was so just unfavorable and just a coincidence with COVID coming up after that. When they announced that the place would actually be cut down, Valvoline Raceway. And then obviously we didn't have another facility built in time. And then there was delays because of COVID and obviously just, I think, natural build delays that were related to just the build. And it really shut down the sport for a few years. And again, you know, teams were traveling everywhere to try and race if they could during COVID. And then some teams weren't racing at all. Some teams have sold up altogether. And then you've got the talent pool in Sydney. You know, I was one of those drivers at one stage where, you know, competing against 60, 70, 80 plus teams and drivers just about every week. And it was so, so tough here in Sydney. The toughest in Australia probably. And then to shut all that down, you know, a lot of the local drivers just haven't raced or just haven't raced well at all. So it's been a really sad time. And even since the new speedway here in Eastern Creek opened up, it didn't have, again, consistent racing, and we haven't had that many shows. Like, it was only open for, I think it was just over a year before it was shut down again. So, it's just, it's had such a massive negative effect. Now, I've got to be honest, I don't think the government really realizes how much they've affected the sport, but again, without harping on the negatives, it's great that we're going to have racing again this weekend.
Well, as I was going to say, like, from what you've seen, though, are all the bones of a good speedway there if all the right things are done from this point on?
I've always said that it's got huge potential. I think the layout of the racetrack, as a driver and a diehard, I look at the surface and think, hey, does this place actually, can it produce the goods? And I really feel that, especially with the recent changes that they've just made, the new promoters have made with the reshaping of the racetrack. We, you know, the best sprint car racing is racing right up around the wall where the drivers are banging the rear crash bars off the wall and then running right down the bottom as well and sliding in between. And you couldn't really do that before with the shaping of the track, but now it looks like it's going to produce that sort of racing. Obviously, you never know what a sprint car or a speedway race is going to produce track-wise, but it changes every night. But it has the bones there definitely to be great. And it's like any sort of sporting facility in that it is brand new too. Like, it actually is beautiful, but it's just got these fundamental problems. You know, it was shoved into a small space and all these other little issues that just, it seems so, so unnecessary. And as you'll see in our videos, like, everyone within the industry just saw it coming, and it was just nothing could be done about it. So, to answer your question, it certainly does have the bones there and huge potential. And we just want to, I guess, the possibility of actually being able to squeeze the most out of it. And hey, there's new promoters in there now, and they're certainly going to have a go.
Just to circle back to the track, so what actually is different in terms of what they've done to the racing surface compared to how it was the last time it was raced on?
So the drivers, and even when you watch some of the onboards, which are on our videos as well, that the track is super, super fast. It's meant to be the same, from my understanding, the outside wall is actually the same outside dimensions of what Parramatta's Dabbling Raceway was. But with a wall, and I said this in our very first video that we made, with the outside wall that Parramatta didn't actually have right around the perimeter of the actual racetrack, it races completely different, and it's actually quite fast, super, super fast. And when you're watching the onboard, like I said, watching the drivers, it's just flat out racing. It's so aggressive, and the corners come up so quickly. So that was one big thing that they wanted to change. I think the new promoters came in, and they've spent a lot of time, you know, for everything that I've been critical of what they've done or haven't done, one thing that they certainly have spent a lot of time on is the actual racing surface. And what they've done is actually added some clay to the bottom of the racetrack and actually narrowed up the corners and actually lengthened the racetrack a little bit. Now, in one way, you could think, okay, that's only going to make it faster because the track's kind of effectively, the shortest part of the track is a little bit longer. So the straights are a little bit longer. But what they're trying to do is, I guess, slow down or lengthen the distance between one end of the racetrack to the other. And then another thing that they've done, and I've got to be honest, I'm really not sure why the former promoters didn't do this, but basically two-thirds of the way up the track, I'm told about 7 meters from the outside wall, was the track just started to taper off a little bit. And what a speedway needs is to have progressive banking, kind of like a bowl, where the bottom of the racetrack is the shortest way around, but it's flat. So it's hard to kind of keep building momentum, or flatter. And then all the way to the outside of the racetrack, it's by far the longest way around the racetrack, but it's also got the most banking and drivers, especially in sprint cars, where we use our wings so much for downforce, can really build up momentum and push those rear wheels into the racetrack and really keep driving off that. So, and as I said earlier, you want to be sliding in between. So it tapered off, and now what they've done is actually added clay there and added the most banking towards the top of the track. So that's a huge difference. And I'm really, really excited to see the style of racing that's going to be at Sydney this weekend.
So hopefully anyone who heads out to Sydney International Speedway this weekend, they should hopefully be in for a pretty good show.
I think so. You know, it's funny because if you're going for the first time, you might, you know, you could, I hate to be negative, but you can come away disappointed because you're expecting, I guess, the same show all the time. And that's kind of the beauty of speedways. You never know what to expect. You could have a two-night show at one track, and there could be different styles of racing, you know, one better than the other, or both great, or both maybe a little bit disappointing, depending on so many different factors. I talk about all the time when I'm doing clay per view coverage or with 7 Plus, you know, there's the amount of cars, the quality of cars, the weather, the sunlight that's on the racetrack, the time of year, the type of categories that are on. There's just so many factors. The wind is a huge one. And now that we're coming towards the end of summer, it's the end of summer now. We're into the fall. To see actually what is going to transpire the racetrack is going to be interesting, not just because of the racetrack changes, but obviously new promoters and also, yeah, the weather, what's going to play out. But definitely, to get back to your point, you know, if you're going for the first time or even if you're a longtime Speedway fan, I think it's going to be a great night of Speedway racing.
Thanks to Toby for joining us to break all that down. And if you want more of his excellent insights into sprint car racing, both here and abroad, search for Sprint Car Hub on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Motorsport News mailbag time, and Andrew Morgan asks, what do you expect the next Supercars TV rights deal to look like? Now, we've already heard from Nathan Prendergast, who talked to Connor O'Brien from V8 Sleuth a week or two ago, that he's really focused on what this next rights deal is going to look like. I don't know necessarily whether I expect this to happen, but what I'd certainly like to see happen is that every race is live on free-to-air. It's been, what are we, like 9 years now into this era of races split on subscription TV, behind a paywall on Fox, and I don't think sure, there was a lot of money that came into the sport as a result of this deal, but I don't think it's been the best for the sport's overall health and growing its fan base to disappear from what is, I guess, the traditional way of reaching the general public for 4 or 5 months of the year between the start of the season and, I guess, Darwin or whichever mid-season round is on free-to-air. So that's one thing I'd like to see changed in the next deal.
Well, yeah, these rights deals just get more and more interesting as the market gets more fragmented into different streaming services and online digital options and all of that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to see it go back to free-to-air as well, but I fear it could go the other way in becoming more spread and under more different paywalls like we've seen with NASCAR over in the US with their new deal with Amazon and things like that. So, yeah, it's really unknown at the moment what it's going to look like. I mean, at the end of the day, they'll probably just take the biggest check. I think that tends to be the MO for these negotiations, but I hope that the overall picture and the health of the sport is taken into account and they make sure it's not hidden away or strung out over so many different platforms that no one knows how to find it all.
I guess the other thing is that as long as the partners are invested in the sport in terms of helping to grow it and promote it and cross-promote it to its other properties, I think that would also be a bit of a boost compared to recent years. Now, before we go, a reminder to check out our teammates' podcasts here on the Motorsport News podcast feed. The boys from Albury have actually got the jump on us this week because the latest step of the Brad Jones Racing Rundown went live on Monday instead of its usual slot, since the boys are going to be a bit busy at Albert Park this Thursday. In the new app, BJR General Manager Chris Westwood and the driver of the number 96 Pizza Hut Chevy Camaro, Macaulay Jones, talk about a bunch of different things, including a few of the unexpected impacts of not having their garages in pit lane like usual. They hint at a new livery for the number 96 Camaro as well, and the money that Mac is raising by growing his mullet this month. And then on Wednesday, Peter and Luke Whitten from Rally Sport Magazine are back with a new episode of the Special Stage Rally podcast, talking about all things rallying both here and around the world. But for now, on behalf of Stefan Bartholomaeus, I'm Will Dale, and we'll catch you next time on the Motorsport News podcast.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here, and yes, I'm inside your speaker. I'm in here because I have a special message for you from Clayton in Melbourne. If you're a club, state or national racer on the circuit or on the dirt in Speedway or rallying, you can now tap into the know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. The same expertise that's won multiple Bathurst 1000s and V8 Supercar Championships is now available for you to call upon. From bonnet to bumper, WRS can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, and so much more for all sorts of makes, models, and categories. Have a chat with Walkinshaw Racing Services and tell them what matters to you. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.